Hello, everybody, and welcome to Planet Paddock. Get ready, y'all. It's race week. Wow, that was unnatural for me. I do not say y'all very often, but F1 is back after fall break, and it is not just any race week. It is Austin week, and you know that saying, everything is bigger in Texas. That obviously applies to F1 as well, but it applies to the elephant in the room when we discuss sustainability in Texas and in motorsport. Oil and gas, and specifically oil and gas sponsorships in F1. When we think of Texas, I think oil and gas are often some of the first things that come to mind, in addition, of course, to barbecue, Daniel Ricciardo, all the great things that Texas has to offer. But Texas is the number one crude oil and natural gas producing state in the U.S., and the oil and gas industry has shaped the state's economic, socio-political landscapes for over a century. But as of 2023, Texas led the nation as well in wind energy production and is growing as a powerhouse for solar and alternative energy solutions, which paints a very complex picture. And I think this is reflective of the larger challenges that the global energy sector is facing as climate change worsens and calls intensify for a global transition away from fossil fuels. And I think with this transition, there's also increased pressure to cut financial and sponsorship ties with fossil fuel companies. So that's where things get a little tricky for motorsport. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. And a surprise for you all, this week we are bringing back a sustainability friend of the podcast, Fiona, and we're going to give you the lay of the land and unpack some of these issues surrounding oil and gas sponsorship in F1. Welcome back, Fiona.
Thank you. It's so good to be back in the saddle to add to our list of Texas references. I'm so ready for Austin. I've got my thinking cap on, aka my mom's Texas Ranger cowboy hat, but this is really a tough topic, all things aside, because sports don't work without sponsorships, right? In addition to all the fans, the staff, and the incredible volunteers that make F1 happen. Sponsorships fund F1's operations, projects, events, and in exchange, sponsors get that visibility, that access, the advertising, and in our case, innovation platforms. But sponsorships are all about mutual benefits for both parties, and there are often conditions attached to sponsorship deals. And in sports worldwide, be it football, snow sports, sailing, tennis, or Formula One, oil and gas companies are some of the biggest sponsors. But as global sport is increasingly focused on sustainability and climate issues, these discussions about oil and gas sponsorships get difficult.
Definitely. So let's start by putting some numbers to this. Fossil fuel companies are currently spending at least $5.6 billion on sports sponsorship deals, according to a report from the New Weather Institute, NWI, that came out in September. Across 205 active deals, motorsport was found to have benefited the most, netting an estimated $2.19 billion from 40 active partnerships with oil and gas companies. So there are some obvious reasons for F1 to benefit the most. After all, they are literally running fuel, which is inextricable from their sport. And many of the major F1 team names reference these fossil fuel sponsorships. Think Mercedes-AMG Petronas after the Malaysian oil company, Aston Martin Aramco after the Saudi Arabian oil giant, which is the biggest oil and gas spender on sport sponsorships globally. And we have a whole host of other oil and gas company sponsors like Ineos, Shell, Sunoco, Gulf. They're decades-old household names in the sport. And this has really always been the case in F1 when you look back across its history, given the direct technological links between motorsport, the automotive industry, and fossil fuel providers. But as we were saying, in today's climate context, concern kind of enters the chat here. So with this in mind, we want to use this week's Planet Paddock episode to do a couple things. I think first, contextualize, connect, define some of the key energy-related concepts and terms that we use in F1 just to get a lay of the land. And then two, dive into some of that history and dive into the challenges of the oil and gas sponsorships in F1 while also laying out some of the tough questions about the future of the sport. And I'll just say before we dive in, it's by no means a comprehensive conversation on quite a controversial topic, but we're excited to get into it so listeners can take this information and vocabulary, learn about these issues for themselves. So we'll go from there.
Yeah, and let's really fire up first with some key terms and concepts. It takes a lot of energy to make F1 happen, and there's an increasing focus on powering the sport more sustainably. F1 is actively developing sustainable fuels to power its cars and aiming to transition to 100% renewable fuel by 2026. We saw a lot of attention last week with the series work with their logistics provider, DHL, to reduce their travel-related emissions using sustainable aviation fuel, aka SAF.
Yeah, check out our episodes on the 2026 regulations and sustainable fuels, which we'll link in the description. But if you want a deep dive on both of those things, how they relate to sustainability, what in the world are drop-in sustainable fuels, that will give you all the information you need to know.
Yeah, and with the 2026 regs on the horizon, which really have a sort of new, more holistic focus on sustainability, we're hearing lots of these sustainability and energy terms like synthetic fuel, renewable energy, carbon capture being thrown around in coverage of the sport. These terms can be confusing and often overlap, so we're going to give y'all a little energy primer here. It starts pretty simply. Everything we do takes energy. TikTok scrolling, growing food, getting it to grocery stores, watching sports, and all this energy takes fuel and power sources. So coal, oil, solar, water, wood, electricity, and infrastructure, electricity grids, wind turbines, solar panels, pipelines, and all of this stuff helps to get energy to us in a usable form.
So all of that kind of defines our first concept, the global energy sector. It's a collection of industries that produce, refine, and sell energy. This includes everything from extracting fossil fuels like coal and oil to creating nuclear power and generating and distributing and selling electricity from renewables. So the energy sector is the major source of global emissions. So it's a key focus area for combating climate change. And from the global energy sector, we get the mix of all the different types of fuels and sources that supply us with energy. We talked a little bit about fossil fuels, coal, oil, and natural gas, which are non-renewable energy sources, and the oil and gas industry, which sits under this global energy sector umbrella as well, is related to this. So oil and gas is a major force in energy because fossil fuels are still our primary fuel sources. And nations that have lots of oil and gas reserves, the US, Saudi Arabia, others, have lots of money to spend on motorsport, which we've been seeing more and more. And the same goes for oil and gas companies. And the context behind all this is that the global energy demand is growing and will continue to grow, but we have this big challenge of providing the energy we need without adding to our carbon footprint and accelerating climate change as much as we possibly can. And there's this joint challenge of distributing energy more equitably as we scale up because energy is still far from equally accessible, affordable, or even distributed. So that's kind of the high-level bird's eye view of the energy sector and the oil and gas industry and how those two interplay.
Yeah, and another big piece of that is where electricity, renewable, green, clean energy, and sustainable fuels come in. These terms often get muddled, but we're going to set the record straight and contextualize sort of what they're doing in the current landscape as we try and transition. Basically, achieving net zero emissions and net zero emissions future heavily relies on electrifying various sectors like transportation, heating, industry, all of which currently depend on fossil fuel combustion. And the thinking is once these sectors have been electrified and their fossil fuel reliance reduced, the goal is to ensure the electricity that and the fuels that power them are as low carbon as possible. This means a mass integration of primarily renewable, clean, and green energy sources, along with sustainable fuels to help with transitions and sticking points. So renewable, clean, and green energy are often used interchangeably, but there are actually some really important distinctions here. Renewable energy refers to energy from natural sources that either replenish themselves or over short periods or don't run out at all, like wind, solar, geothermal, hydropower, biomass are the most common ones that we talk about. Renewable energy sources are considered carbon-free, meaning they produce minimal to no carbon emissions. Green energy is an interesting subset of renewable energy and refers to energy sources that are renewable but have the smallest possible environmental footprint. Clean energy refers to electricity that doesn't actually create any greenhouse gases during generation, although clean energy isn't necessarily renewable energy, nuclear being the key example. And this sort of brings us to sustainable fuels. We hear F1 talking a lot about sustainable fuels, synthetic fuels, which fall into this matrix of clean, green, and renewable energy as the 2026 regs will require F1 fuel to be carbon neutral. Sustainable fuels can be used in place of fossil fuels or blended with traditional fuels, for example. Sustainable aviation fuel can be blended with traditional jet fuel and can be used in current airport infrastructure. It's a great example of a fuel that can help us transition. And this is how F1 has been able to make progress on its aviation emissions.
But it sort of all begs the question of who is setting the pace on sustainable fuels and, in many cases, renewable energy technology. And the answer is oil and gas companies. And this brings us right back to this oil and gas sponsorship in F1. So, like we mentioned earlier, oil and gas company sponsorships touch most sports, but motorsport is currently benefiting the most from these investments. We know that these dollars help support the sport we love, but the question of what those dollars actually do, especially when it comes to sustainability projects, is where things get a little complicated. So the motorsport and oil and gas sponsorship issue essentially comes down to two things: advertising and accountability. So the NWI report we cited earlier echoes scientists' arguments that by aligning themselves with the sports sector, oil and gas companies are, quote, seeking to associate their product with sports' immense social capital and positive health impacts. This, in other words, can be called sports washing. The NWI report framed fossil fuel sponsorship deals as buying kind of, quote, social license to operate in an attempt to divert attention from oil and gas companies' role in fueling climate crisis and harming human health. And this sort of all has to do with the advertising of those things.
We've heard this in motorsport circles and beyond, and seen research that supports the fact that oil and gas companies' approach to climate change follows Big Tobacco's playbook from the 1960s through the 1980s to sponsor both science and motorsport to legitimize and normalize their products in the face of overwhelming evidence of negative and planetary health consequences. While tobacco is effectively banned on paper from sponsorship and advertising in motorsport, fossil fuel ads and sponsorships in F1 are now at the center of a similar debate. So The Hague in the Netherlands recently became the first city to pass legislation making it illegal to advertise fossil fuel products. This came after a call by the UN chief Antonio Guterres for governments and media to enact immediate fossil ad bans, as they have done with tobacco in many cases, in the face of a climate crunch. This started a lot of discussion of what fossil fuel ad bans could do to F1.
And that idea of changing ads on F1 cars is not new. It's almost like another flavor of when F1 teams cover up alcohol sponsorship labels on their cars at some of the races in the Middle East. If you remember the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix earlier this year, the Peroni beer ads on the SF24 instead said simply Tifosi 0.0%. And I think Carlos Estrella maybe had 0.0 stickers that were covered up too, but while the advertising issue is intertwined with religious law, F1 still has to be mindful of the legal, the cultural landscapes in the markets it races in, and fossil fuels could become a part of that conversation as well. So while we're nowhere near a global fossil fuel ads ban on the regional or global scale of alcohol or tobacco, it's still an interesting line to consider. So I guess the question is it likely? Would it have an impact? Potentially. It's kind of unclear at this stage.
Yeah, and I think the advertising issue is just one piece of a bigger question surrounding accountability, which is where the real challenges lie. To quote Sports Pro Media here, which I think covered the NWI report on sports washing and motorsport oil and gas sponsorships really well, quote, "The true impact of sports partnerships on legitimizing the oil and gas industries remains unclear, as details around most deals are not publicly disclosed, including if any of the sports bodies or sponsors impose conditions," close quote. Essentially, this emphasizes the fact that sponsorships go both ways, right? A lack of accountability and transparency surrounding the conditions of these deals and their possible impacts on climate policies and sustainability efforts within motorsport itself is something that we don't have a good way of judging, especially because so much of the sincere sustainable progress in motorsport does stem from longstanding partnerships and innovation among motorsport, fossil fuel-rich countries, and oil and gas corporations. And this sort of brings us to who's walking the walk when it comes to renewable energy, sustainable fuel, and oil and gas companies.
There are so many reasons to learn a new language, but our favorite is for traveling. Of course, we travel all the time for F1 races, but also just for personal and fun travel as well. And we always like to feel better equipped when heading to a new country. When it comes to race weekends and the logistics, knowing the language really, really helps. But also just knowing the language helps us deepen our cultural appreciation for new places. So even if you're not traveling anytime soon, it can be a fun hobby that actually has lots of studied cognitive benefits. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learner learning program and the perfect place to start. With over 30 years of experience, millions of users, and 25 languages offered, Rosetta Stone is the place to learn a language fast. It's designed for fast language acquisition and long-term retention. Plus, with their app, it's super convenient to learn. So don't put off learning that new language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Paddock Project listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. Women's health is really, really important to us, and we think that balanced hormones really play a key role in that. One thing that we've been loving is the supplement Hormone Harmony from Happy Mammoth, and that's a company that's committed to making women's lives easier. Hormone Harmony contains adaptogens, science-backed herbal extracts that help the body adapt to stressors like hormone changes that can happen naturally throughout a woman's life. We love it because it helps us maintain optimal hormone levels and supports our mood and general well-being, especially in our crazy day-to-day times. There is a reason that Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code FORTHEGIRLS at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code F1RTHEGIRLS for 15% off today. Like most people, we love a great deal, but what we don't love is jumping through a million hoops just to end up saving a few dollars, especially when it comes to wireless plans. There's so many promos and offers out there, but they do really make it hard to get good quality savings. With Mint Mobile, it really is so easy though. For just $15 a month, you can get a wireless plan when you get a 3-month plan. And the website and activation process are so seamless. Honestly, the longest part of this process is going to be the time that you spend on hold trying to break up with your old provider. To get started, go to mintmobile.com/F1RTheGirls. There you can see that right now all 3-month plans are only $15 a month, including the unlimited plan. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan, and you can bring your old phone number along with all of your existing contacts. So to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month premium wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/F1RTheGirls. That's mintmobile.com/F1RTheGirls. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/F1RTheGirls. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions may apply. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning F1 championships is sometimes also what you need to keep your beloved car running day in and day out. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're looking for speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has got you covered. They have over 122 million parts for your car. You'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And they have eBay Guaranteed Fit, which means your part is guaranteed to fit your car every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're about burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. So keep your car alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Yeah, so as we mentioned, the oil and gas companies investing in renewable energy and sustainable fuel R&D tech and infrastructure exist. For example, today in F1, teams are working with their partners like Petronas, Shell, Aramco to try and innovate around sustainable fuels for F1 cars in line with the 2026 regulations. But it's sort of a next step, but a questionable one, and it's a long-standing relationship between oil and motorsport. So starting with Shell's super long-standing and kind of trend-setting partnership with Ferrari way back in the 1920s, the fossil fuel industry has long associated itself with motorsport as a product testing and development platform in addition to an advertising platform. So as we think about F1's transition to net zero, it's way more complicated than just flipping a switch from fossil fuels to renewable energy. And it makes sense that F1 is working with these companies on these challenges, because oil and gas companies do have the capital, they have the expertise, R&D budgets, and the political sway to really make a dent in these issues if they want to, which is the key part of that point. But we have to consider the global economic context of this. I think Bloomberg recently reported that the oil and gas sector is increasingly shifting away from renewables and power in its decarbonization efforts due to low returns. Obviously, they're businesses, they need to make money. And there was a quote there that was saying, these areas once dominated the sector's energy transition spending, but now carbon capture and storage and renewable fuels are becoming sort of the new darlings of the industry, for lack of a better term.
We are seeing a lot of investment in carbon capture and storage tech by the McLaren and Mercedes F1 teams, and both have been able to make really exciting progress on bettering the efficacy of these technologies using their own expertise in materials science and engineering to help close some of these knowledge gaps in different sectors. We've talked about this in our recent episode with Kim Wilson, McLaren's F1 head of sustainability. And this is just one way that F1 is actively contributing to broader climate solutions, sometimes independently of oil and gas companies. Global net zero isn't going to be possible without carbon capture and storage, whether it comes from sustainable fuels related carbon capture or from projects that literally suck carbon out of the atmosphere. But the largest part of the climate solutions puzzle still really needs to be cutting emissions. And that in large part comes down to some tough conversations to be had about fossil fuel use and oil and gas companies' social and literal licenses to operate.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things coming out of this is the legal side. So in the most recent version of our newsletter, we talked about California's multi-billion-dollar lawsuit against ExxonMobil that was filed just a few weeks ago. And the case alleges that ExxonMobil carried out a, quote, decades-long campaign of deception that overhyped the promise of recycling, spawned a plastic pollution crisis, basically greenwashing. So this suit is an example of a new type of climate case, one in which oil and gas companies could be held responsible for their role in the climate crisis and on the grounds that they deceived the public in a quest for profit. So this is just one of a handful of similar cases that have been filed by state and local governments in the U.S., and none of them have gone to trial yet. So this, we'll see what happens, but this type of case illustrates a possible legal solution to kind of close that accountability vacuum in sustainability and climate issues.
And this accountability vacuum brings us back to this idea of sports washing, the practice of sponsoring an athlete or a major sporting event with the intention of distracting world attention from unethical practices like human rights abuses and pollution. This is a very real concern along with greenwashing, and there really aren't good regulatory tools right now to combat sports washing or greenwashing. This means that who we bring to the table to tackle these issues is really important because emissions need to come down and quickly, which will involve a transition away from fossil fuels. COP29, the annual UN climate conference, is coming up in just a few weeks in Azerbaijan, and this is going to be a major theme there. You can check out our Baku Grand Prix Sustainability Spotlight Instagram reel for more information on what COP is and how it works.
And what's been really great to see is that motorsport has had a growing presence at COP over the last few years, especially Formula E. Formula One has also been involved, but it's indicative of the fact that the sport is interested in tackling some of these challenges and wants to be involved in the global conversation. But oil and gas companies have that immense power in the energy sector, and there are no easy answers to the question of whether or not they should sit at the table to help facilitate a faster transition to cleaner energy sources by leveraging their infrastructure, expertise, market influence to scale these technologies. And we can debate whether F1 as a sport has a role to play in helping with this for the transportation sector and the energy sector more broadly. But at the very least, F1 should be held accountable for ensuring that they're not just a vehicle, no pun intended, for legitimizing businesses that are harming our world. So it's not a simple debate or a simple conversation. It's quite nuanced, but hopefully this has given you all some food for thought, and you can go forward and learn more and develop your own opinions on how you think this should go, because as fans, I think we have the ability to speak out on these things. So thank you for tuning in, and we'll be back on Thursday with an Austin Grand Prix preview.